Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, all, and welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avalon, author, journalist, recent congressional candidate. This podcast is about solutions to the problems we face. Rather than, I think, the avalanche of fixating on problems, let's talk about how we can work together, how we can find solutions that just might appeal to the moderate majority of Americans. And joining me today is Congressman Tom Suozzi of New York 3, just recently reelected in a district Trump carried, and had a fascinating op-ed in the New York Times in which he laid out a path and an argument for Democrats on how and where they should work with the incoming Trump administration. That's downright radical today, and so I wanted to talk with him about how he sees the path forward as we approach the re-inauguration of Donald Trump. Tom, it's good to see you. I admire you, and it's a pleasure to be with you, my friend.
Hey, John, I admire you too, and I'm so happy to be with you, and thanks for having me on. And I like the title of this program that you're doing. My campaign theme was Let's Fix This.
That's right.
It's like the perfect show for me to be on.
It is.
Appreciate you having me on. You're a good man.
You and I both campaign as Common Sense Democrats in adjoining districts on Long Island, and I think that's what most folks want, is to government to work again. And I want to read a paragraph in your op-ed that really jumped out at me and then dig into it. Here's what you wrote. This election was a mandate, but it wasn't for one-party rule. Mr. Trump won with less than 50% of the popular vote. Republicans have thin majorities in the House and Senate. But as I see it, the results of the 2024 campaign were a mandate for border security, immigration reform, low inflation, economic stability, and common ground on culture war fights. That's good for America. So let's make that our shared agenda in 2025. There's a majority of votes for all of it. Tom, I agree with you. This is not conventional wisdom among Democrats, but it's a question of where you stand up to Trump's successes and where you can find common ground. You just laid it out. So let's talk about where you see common ground that we can actually get things done, beginning with border security, a huge issue in your district and around the country.
Yeah, thank you so much, John. I really appreciate it. I just want, you know, I've gotten viewpoints from people from all different sides on how I've approached this. But as you know, we have to resist when appropriate, but we just can't be the party of no all the time. In his previous incarnation as president, I was in Congress back then. I resisted Trump when he tried to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. I resisted Trump when he tried to deport the Dreamers. But we have to figure out where we need to continue to resist, you know, weaponizing the Department of Justice, trying to undo all the stuff we've tried to do on climate, and a whole bunch of other stuff. But let's try to work together where we can. So you're asking about specifically about the border. Most people, Democrats and Republicans, don't like seeing chaos at the border. And we need to secure the border. We need to fix the broken asylum system. And I hope we'll get a chance to talk about what that means.
We will.
And we need to treat people like human beings in the process. You know, Trump said recently that he wants to make a deal on the Dreamers. Good. Let's do it for real. Let's not just talk about it. We'll help secure the border with more wall and more judges and more Border Patrol agents. And we'll fix the broken asylum system that's being abused right now. But let's also give the Dreamers a pathway to legalization so they don't have to look over their shoulder like they have for the past 20 or 30 years.
Absolutely.
Let's help the temporary protected status folks that we invited to America because they had an earthquake or a civil war 20 or 30 years ago. Let's help them have legal status. And let's do something about the 50% of farm workers in America that are undocumented. So Democrats and Republicans need to stop making each other enemies. And instead, we need to have a common enemy. And that enemy should be the organized crime, the cartels, the coyotes that are making billions of dollars a year by subjecting people to these awful journeys to get to our southern border, subjecting them to sexual abuse, financial abuse, death and ruining our country in the process. Let's make them our enemies and stop making Democrats and Republicans enemies of each other.
Couldn't agree with you more. Of course, in recent years, we've seen a lot of people who want to demagogue a problem rather than deal with it, particularly on border security. You know, we had a bipartisan bill that was negotiated by the most conservative, one of the most conservative senators from Oklahoma, James Lankford, that was rejected by Donald Trump and then Republicans abandoned under this idea that they could do their own narrowly partisan bill if Donald Trump were elected. Well, Trump has been elected, but as you say, the margins are close. Even in the last Congress, though, you were working with Congressman Luttrell from Texas on trying to actually come up with a bipartisan plan that could get bipartisan support. So what does that look like and how is it different from these hard partisan plans that have been put forward?
Well, let me say that, you know, the Republicans are going to have a hard time doing this themselves because of these narrow majorities. We're going to see this rear its ugly head when the debt ceiling comes due on March 14th. And I doubt they're going to have their reconciliation plan in place by then, but they can try, of course. But if they want to fix the border, they're never going to be able to get their entire panoply of people from the more moderate Republicans to the far right-wing Freedom Caucus people to agree. Even if they do it in the reconciliation deal, that's only for financial aspects. That doesn't deal with asylum. That doesn't deal with changing the law. That only deals with money for the border wall or for judges or for border patrol agents, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm working on with Congressman Luttrell, who's a pretty conservative guy, former Navy SEAL from Texas, border state, is we've had a whole bunch of bipartisan negotiations over the years. You mentioned the Senate bill that was negotiated last Senate in February of 2024 that, you know, the Wall Street Journal said this is the best thing we've seen in decades. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said this looks good. The president of the Border Patrol Union, who's a big Trumper, said this is what we should do. Mm-hmm. Even Mitch McConnell said we should do it. He doesn't support anything. And, you know, Biden said he'd support it. And Kamala Harris said she would support it. I said I would support it. A lot of people said they would support it. And Trump pulled the rug out from under us. Well, that's an example of a bipartisan deal that really was negotiated and has a lot of great pieces to it. Then there have been negotiations on farm workers over the years. Lots of bipartisan stuff. Farm Worker Modernization Act really addressed the issues of farm workers. Stuff that's been done on Dreamers, stuff that's been done on, I mean, so many bipartisan deals. We don't need a bunch of new deals. We need to build a coalition of Democrats and Republicans nationwide with support from business, badges, and the Bible to get them to all say, listen, we want to help America's economy. Businesses. We can't wreck our businesses. We can't shut down all these farms and meatpacking plants, you know, by kicking all these people out. Badges, local law enforcement doesn't want to do this stuff. They want the federal government to do this. You don't want police to be deputized on these issues because then they lose community trust and then they don't get crimes reported to them. They don't get confidential informants to give them information because everybody's afraid of the cops. Basic concept of community policing is the people trust the cops and the cops know who to talk to in the community. So badges don't want this to be done by the local cops. They want this done at the federal level. Maybe you could get the corrections officers involved, the jails involved. And third, the Bible. That's anybody who believes that, you know, all men and women are created equal and have human dignity. And let's not treat people like animals. Let's enforce the law, but let's be practical about how we do it. And let's treat people with dignity in the process. And there's a lot of people that believe that.
Well, of course, there are a lot of people that believe that. On the flip side is Trump's campaign promises to have, in his words, bloody mass deportations.
Terrible.
I agree with you. Should he go forward with that? Does it make getting a bipartisan border deal more difficult or more achievable because there's urgency in your mind?
I think that, you know, Democrats have to be smart here. We should support the idea of deporting criminals. Yeah. Everybody should support that. Who's against deporting criminals? So
literally almost nobody. I mean, Barack Obama did it. You know, come on.
So let's deport the criminals now. But let's work together as the way to do it the right way, because when the time comes that the ICE officers bust down somebody's door where a criminal used to live, but now a innocent family is living there and these kids are traumatized, And you start seeing instances like that, or you start seeing, you know, mommy getting taken away from her children, or daddy taken away from his wife and family, you know, you're going to have a lot of tumult. We should be working together to do these things instead of my way or the highway type stuff. Because, again, our common enemy has got to be the people trying to abuse our system, the organized crime and cartels and coyotes, not each other. Let's find some common ground as to how we can get this stuff done together.
Is there a sense, it's early in the new Congress, but is there a sense that any of the bills that have been worked on in the past might be reintroduced? I mean, or are we starting from zero all over?
I think there'll be a lot of stuff reintroduced. I think that the Republicans' inclination is going to be to do my way or the highway to start out.
Yeah.
They're going to realize the pitfalls associated with that. They're going to need Democratic support. And so the normal inclination of both sides is to make this adversarial. I mean, it's one of those, there's a reason this hasn't happened for 30 years. We've been talking about this for 30 years. People are going to want to go into their respective quarters and make it shirts versus skins. That's the normal behavior of human beings on tough issues, which is why so many tough issues don't get resolved. As leaders, whether you're an elected official or you're running a podcast or you're a candidate, we have to rise up and say, you know, come on, everybody. We've been doing this for 30 years. It's not working. Let's figure out how we can take some grief maybe from our own base and fight the extremes on both sides and say, let's find a way forward. It takes leadership, takes hard work. It's not enough to do a speech or a podcast. It's constant trust building and finding that common ground.
Well, and to your point, too many elected leaders, frankly, act like followers, but there is a lot of common ground to be found. What's frustrating is, and what, you know, pisses me off and so many folks, is that the real disruption to the dysfunctional status quo is to get comprehensive immigration reform done.
Hard.
Which was something that I think it was the Gang of Eight or 12 a decade ago had been working on. And then the far right pulled the plug again, because ideally this should be border security. It should be dealing with asylum, and I wanted you to get your prescription on that. It should be also the Dreamers, and it should be reforming the existing system. It should be all together. Do you think there's any shot in hell of getting comprehensive immigration reform done? Because that's what needs to be done. Everybody knows
it. It can't be everything. It's got to be using these existing issues that have been debated to the nth degree already, where we have found some common ground, and then building the outside coalition to support it. So like asylum, for example, okay?
Let's talk about that, yeah.
I'm 62 years old. In the 1980s, if somebody applied for asylum, they were usually coming from the Soviet Union. And when they applied for asylum, everybody was like, yes, asylum, come to America. It's the greatest place in the world. They had a movie, Moscow on the Hudson, with Robin Williams.
Yeah, you know, it's like, great movie.
It's like, you know, we love asylum. Come to America. We're the good guys. They're the bad guys. You want to escape that terrible system and come here. We love you. Please come. And that's what America stood for throughout our history.
That's right.
What's happened now is the asylum system, the organized crime, the cartels, the coyotes have figured out how to game the system. They go out to people. They say, pay me $10,000. I'll get you to the border through some awful conditions. And when you get there, these are the key things you say. So you could pass the first credible fear interview.
Yeah.
You'll get into the system. The system is overwhelmed thanks to us criminals who have exploited the system. And it will take 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 years before they get to your case. In the meanwhile, you're in America. Oh, sounds great. Here's your $10,000. So the system is so overwhelmed by people abusing the asylum system for the cases are ultimately adjudicated. 85% of the cases are denied. 85%, sometimes 90% some years. They're denied. But it takes 6, 7, 8, 9 years to get to the case.
Which is insane.
Which is insane. Why? Because the system is overwhelmed. Because when they did a bipartisan deal to get more judges and more asylum officers and more Border Patrol agents and more this to actually deal with the backlog, it was killed by Trump. So you need to shut off the pipeline. So what I've said, what was in the Senate deal and what was in the president's executive order that I advocated for along with a Republican, Brian Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania,
Good man, yeah.
The president did what I suggested, which was, let's say no asylum in between the ports of entry. Now, in the Senate bill, there was this threshold. It had to be a certain number of cases per day before the president could use his executive authority to implement this shutoff of asylum applications in between the ports of entry. That's the whole thing the Republicans use. Oh, it's going to be 5,000 people a day, yeah. Which is not accurate. But they sold that effectively to sabotage the deal.
Yeah.
Then the president's executive order was 2,500 people a day, of which 1,500 are at the ports of entry. So it's only 1,000 people a day. That's been in place for the past, I don't know how many months now, 6 months more. The numbers are down dramatically.
Yes.
They got cooperation from Mexico as well. The numbers are way, way, way down below what they were when Biden took office because of his executive order, because of the enforcement, because of help from Mexico. I'm saying, you know what? Don't even make it a number. Just say no asylum applications in between the ports of entry. Why should someone have to travel through Mexico or through the Darien Gap or, you know, subject themselves to these awful conditions through deserts and danger and gangs and rapists and, you know, robbery? We should be making an opportunity for people to apply for asylum in remote locations. So the Republicans...
A U.S. embassy in a foreign country, for example.
Correct.
Right.
The Republicans did a thing called Remain in Mexico. Remain in Mexico is really a bad idea because what happens is people remain in Mexico and they're all abused in Mexico. First, they have to travel to get to Mexico in the first place where they get exploited. And then when they're in Mexico, they're getting further exploited. We should be letting people apply in their home countries or neighboring countries in safe locations throughout the world. While they're applying, you stay there. And if you're accepted, you come to America. You're not accepted, you don't come to America. 85% of the cases are not accepted. And you reduce all this incoming traffic and you get the resources to get rid of the backlog that we have in the country in the meanwhile without continuing to build the backlog.
And there are two pieces to that. First of all, no port of entry, that's essential. I agree. More judges to adjudicate the claims more rapidly so you don't have this sort of black market limbo.
Asylum officers,
And then finally, it seems to me that, look, asylum is, we're both the grandson of immigrants. And I believe your father, your grandfather.
My father.
Okay. So
you're from Italy.
There you go. With a name like Swazi. I didn't think you were
Irish. Swazi.
But my question to you is, I mean, economic asylum is actually not a thing.
No.
And that's important to emphasize, right?
There's three elements. Secure the border, fix the broken asylum system, and modernize the legal immigration system. And the elements of modernizing the legal immigration system are Dreamers, TPS, farm workers, healthcare workers, Afghan readjustment.
Yes.
And then there's all this other stuff that's out there, you know, that maybe you can't do it all at once. You know, the
fact they've been punting on Afghan readjustment is so offensive.
It's sad.
Ridiculous.
It's sad. It's very sad. Sad for the, all this stuff is sad. You know, there's so many people that come to America legally every year. There's about 1 million people that come to America legally every year. Most of them, overwhelming, like 600,000 or 700,000, I forget the numbers, are because of family reunification. Now, there are millions of people in the pipeline that are eligible to legally come to America under family reunification. You know, you've got family here, they're citizens, and you've got a close enough relationship that under the law, you're eligible to come to America. That's the biggest bulk of people that come to America now. You've got 50,000 people that can come from a diversity lottery, which is the idea that was set up a few years ago. It's only 50,000 people that you can come if you're from a country where we haven't normally had a lot of people come from those countries. There's like, I think it's like 20 million people signed up for that. We have 50,000 a year. Then we have, it depends on who the president is, what they do, but 50 to 100,000 people that can come for asylum. They, you know, that get processed for these asylum cases. Then you've got people that have signed up because of their skills.
This is the H-1B fight, right?
There are millions of people that have signed up, 6-7 million people. We let in, you know, I forget the number. It's less than 100,000 a year, I think it is. So we got all these people who want to come to America for all these different things. We got to figure out, you know, like the farm workers, for example. Sure. We don't have to make them citizens. I'm okay. You don't have to, but this has all been negotiated by Democrats and Republicans as to how to have farm workers come here legally, pay their taxes, pay into Social Security. You want to fix Social Security? Get more people paying Social Security so they pay into the system. We got a lot of people who are working underground that are not paying into Social Security. We could get so many more people paying into Social Security that are here currently, that are working currently. Just put them into the system.
Do it the right way.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle. With ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
All right. Immigration, obviously, this is an area where there's a degree of urgency and there should be the ability to get something done. Frankly, the bipartisan bill should have passed last Congress, but Trump pulled the plug. Now let's see if Republicans find religion about that bill or something else. You mentioned two other big issues, and I want to drill down on. One is lowering the cost of living. As you and I've spoken a lot about, I mean, to me, the middle class squeeze is the fundamental driver of polarization and destabilization of our politics. Middle class has been getting squeezed for decades. So the inflation just was the insult to the injury on that larger affordability crisis, particularly an issue here on Long Island, housing costs and so much else. But what can Congress do, really, to address the affordability crisis in a bipartisan way, do you think?
Well, the big issue for you and I as Long Islanders, New Yorkers, is the state and local tax deduction.
Yeah.
So we can have a whole separate conversation about that. But I mean, that's a big thing. You know, related to prescription drugs is a big thing where we set it up that you can negotiate, the federal government can negotiate prices for Medicare for prescription drugs we get. That's in place. That's going to save $6 billion next year.
Right. Let's put a point on that. It capped costs for seniors. It just took effect, so Biden got no credit for it, right? Democrats negotiated for taking place in the beginning of the next presidency. And it saved the government money. If that's not a win-win, I don't know what the hell is, Tom.
Doge should love it, right?
Right.
And that was just for Medicare. Let's do it for private sector as well. We negotiate these prices, have the prices expand to the private sector as well. And you know, we'll save so much money in our country. It'll give people so much relief in the process. I would like to talk about, you know, what happened in America that the middle class has been decimated. Why did this happen? So I used three movies as the vehicle to explain what happened in America. The first movie, not everybody knows this one, is Gung Ho. It was a Michael Keaton movie.
I remember that.
A Japanese company took over a U.S. automobile company. They shut down the plant and they negotiated, like, we're going to reopen the plant. We're going to run it the Japanese way. So the unions lost their wages that they had, but they were going to hire everybody back, and everybody was like dying to get back. But they want to start running the Japanese where they're going to have calisthenics in the morning. And it was like a comedy of the conflict between the Japanese culture and the American culture. And the idea was like, you know, think of these guys who worked at the auto plant. It's all stereotypical, you know, guys who are in the UAW. And they're like, ah, we're not going to do this kind of stuff. Wait, you got to get us. And the Japanese guys say, what? These guys don't do the calisthenics. They don't work as a team. You know, and it was all about quality assurance and about saving money and stuff like that.
Right.
So that's the problem. In the 1980s, again, we were all worried about the Japanese and the German car manufacturers taking over the American auto industry. And it was like in 1987 or so that Japan took over America as far as producing more cars. So that's the first step. Movie two is Wall Street. Michael Douglas, Gordon Gekko. What's the famous line? Greed is good.
Yeah.
America responding to the Japanese and the German companies, and then ultimately, you know, Korea, Mexico, and ultimately China doing all this stuff, said, we got to change the way we do things in America. In the old days, companies worried about the shareholder, but they also worried about their employees, and they also worried about the community they were in. Milton Friedman wrote a paper. He said, forget about worrying about the community you're in. You don't have to be a great corporate citizen. Forget about your employees. There'll be plenty of employees, global marketplace. Just worry about the shareholder and everything else will work out. And we adopted that philosophy. That was Gordon Gekko. Greed is good. And so the third movie is Pretty Woman with Richard Gere and Julia Roberts.
Sure.
And remember that, you know, Jason Alexander was with Richard Gere and they go to take over the old guy's company. And they said, okay, we're going to shut down this shipbuilding plant. We're going to sell off all the equipment. We're going to sell off this stuff. We're going to build over. The old guy's like, all these people are going to lose their jobs. You're going to destroy the town. She said, yeah, but we'll make a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's what happened in America. And we've made a lot of money. The Dow Jones has gone up 2,500% since the 1980s. And the GDP has gone up, you know, 1,500, 2,000% since the 1980s. Workers' wages have gone up 30%.
Yeah.
And we have decimated these towns all over America where there's this big, hulking old factory that's a polluted site. And the people all lost their union jobs. And now they don't have health insurance and they're going bankrupt because they can't afford their bills. And, you know, their teeth are falling them out because they don't have a dentist anymore. And, nobody's going to church anymore. And the church is empty. And there's no more Rotary Club and no more Elks Club. And the kids are doing methamphetamine and fentanyl. And these people are working minimum wage jobs, $7.25 an hour is the minimum wage in 20 states in America. And these people are pissed off.
Yeah.
And like, what happened? What happened to my town? What happened? And they're looking for somebody to blame. And Donald Trump has given them somebody to blame.
This is what's crazy though, right? First of all, I love that you cited three movies and I know them all. And I think you're right. It's a great way to explain it to people. My mother's from Youngstown, Ohio. And that's one place that, right. You know, my grandparents lived there their entire lives. Right?
Ground zero.
And it's a place I know well, and I care about a lot. And I spent a lot of time there growing up. The trick, the political bait and switch that frustrates me that I want to get your take on is that those movies you talk about are all the 1980s. That's the Reagan era. That's the downside of Reaganomics. And actually, Joe Biden in his 88 campaign warned about this stuff. He said the middle class is getting hollowed out. These proud cities and towns are getting hollowed out. But then the arsonist, because the policies came from the right by and large, the arsonist then appears as the firefighter and benefits politically with grievance politics. So how do Democrats get caught on the back foot and how can we sort of square the circle? And there are some Republicans who care about, I mean, notably J.D. Vance is from Ohio and talks about this stuff sometimes. It's a sort of one side of him where he's shown a sliver of bipartisan instinct. How did that judo move happen? And how do Democrats get back on the right foot on this?
Well, I think what you said right there at the beginning of that was the bait and switch. Trump is a master. And a lot of times these guys are pickpockets. And what happens with a pickpocket is one guy comes and bumps into you.
Yeah.
And when you're jostled, the other guy on the team picks your pocket. So it's happening right now as we speak, okay? President-elect Trump is talking about Greenland, Panama, the Gulf of Mexico changing to the Gulf of America, making Canada the 50th. I mean, everybody's all in a tizzy. It's on the news every night. Wait a minute. What happened to his big promises? He's going to end the Ukrainian war in one day. We're going to get the hostages out before he takes office, which I hope he will. And I know that Biden's working on that. I hope he does all these things. And he's going to lower everybody's gas prices and egg prices and grocery prices. Right away, it's easy, he said. It's easy. So don't get distracted by the jostling into you on Panama and Greenland, et cetera. Let's focus on the stuff he said he was going to do already. It's easy to lower prices. We're going to end the Ukrainian war in one day. We're going to get the hostages out. Do that stuff first. Hold him. He's going to restore salt, he said. He went to the National Coliseum. He's going to restore the state and local. Do it.
Yeah.
I'll applaud you as soon as you do it.
And the chance, look, I mean, maybe he'll follow through on that. Maybe he'll follow through on the Dreamers. But, you know, Trump's word is he's transactional. But you don't take his word to the bank. The deeper issue how to rebuild the middle class and the remittal of our politics, something we're both really committed to. And that's almost an entirely other show. But you think the affordability crisis, you think, could be alleviated by things like restoring the state and local tax deduction, the prescription drug prices, presumably CHIPS Act and infrastructure getting fully implemented will help. Biden did a lot that's going
to
help.
We need people to make more money.
Yeah.
We need people to make more money. Why don't we increase the minimum wage in America? Okay, it's $7.25 an hour in 20 states. If you make $10 an hour and you work 40 hours a week and you work 50 weeks a year and you have 2 weeks vacation, that's $20,000 a year. If you make $15 an hour, same metrics, you make $30,000 a year. You're working hard, you're working full time, you get 2 weeks vacation. You're not going to buy a house, educate your kids, pay for health insurance, and retire one day without being scared on $20 or $30 or $40,000 a year. It's not going to happen.
Hell no.
So we have to rebuild the minimum. So let's increase the minimum wage. Let's support the PRO Act. Okay? You say J.D. Vance wants to support the unions, or some Republicans that say they want to support working families.
Fitzpatrick supports the PRO Act. I know the Republicans.
It's one guy. It's one guy. And I applaud him, but we need more.
Yeah.
When the Teamsters said, we're not going to endorse in this election, I was like, are you kidding me? Who's going to increase the minimum wage? Who's going to do the PRO Act? Who's going to do the CHIPS Act, like you said, and the infrastructure bill? Those created – Joe Biden was 100% right. He just does not communicate as well as he needed to.
That's right.
That we need to build the economy from the bottom up and the middle out. We need to recreate the middle class. To do that, the money we make at this top needs to be shared with the people who go to work every day. We don't need to distribute it through taxes and through government. I don't trust government to do that. We need the companies to pay their workers more and give them health insurance and pension benefits. We need to rebuild a middle class that has a good life. I don't care whether you're a progressive or a conservative. Everybody in America should believe if you're willing to work hard, in return for working hard, you make enough money so you can have a good life.
Yeah.
Conservative, progressive, everybody should believe that. I work hard, I make enough money, I can buy a house, I can educate my kids, pay for health insurance, and I can retire without being scared. That's America, the American dream, right there. Not more complicated than that.
You're right. And obviously, though, that basic promise has been undercut since those movies you just mentioned were named.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle. With ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
I want to hit on the third bit, on sort of turning down the volume on the culture wars. And what's the right way for Democrats, do you think, to find common ground, to turn down the volume without abandoning values?
Very tough to do, okay? And part of it has to be having the guts to actually have these conversations, okay? John, and this goes with every issue, not just the culture war stuff, but everything, every issue. John F. Kennedy wrote a book called Profiles in Courage. And that was after 175 years of American history. And there were 8 people in the book. Yeah. Okay, so it doesn't happen as often we would like that people are willing to talk to their own party. So in the race for president, Trump spent $200 million, the most of any campaign commercial, on the transgender commercial.
Yeah.
And we didn't respond at all. There was no response whatsoever. And he took the issue using an interview with Vice President Harris from years ago and talked about transgender, paying for surgery and for transitioning with taxpayer dollars and doing it for people that are in jail. So he took 3 issues, this very tough issue of transgender, add to it taxpayer money and add to it criminals. Like, oh my gosh. And we didn't respond. We never even said a word. Why? Because on a lot of issues, we're afraid to even talk about it because it's the third rail and we're going to get excoriated by our own base that for even mentioning it. And quite frankly, we didn't have the long form interviews like this of what you're doing, which is so wonderful, where you can actually talk this stuff through. I have 100% rating for the Human Rights Campaign. 100% rating. Have always supported LGBT rights. And we must continue to support populations that are underserved or that are minorities or that are subject to discrimination. We must continue to, and I will continue to always do that. But I am, like most Americans, concerned about transgender women playing in competitive women's sports. Okay? Now, when I first brought this up, I brought it up the day after the election, and I was frustrated and I was upset about the commercials and we didn't respond. And I said, I'm concerned about boys playing in girls' sports. Well, that was the wrong way to say it, because I'm really not concerned about little kids.
Yeah.
But when I see a man who's transitioned to a woman, a transgender woman, competing in competitive sports like the NCAA, I'm concerned, because I don't, and it's a very tough issue, and it should really be done by the experts, like the people in those leagues, and they should be adjudicating the stuff, not Congress. But we can't be afraid to talk about it, because people are going to say, oh, you're picking on this group or that. No, we got to be able to, we have to talk about it.
And being afraid to talk about anything is a sign of illiberalism. But you're right. There's a balance between common sense and just kindness and decency. And that's the sweet spot there. I want to hit a couple of quick points for you as we close up. One, there are some areas where you are a deep believer in bipartisanship. That's how we get things done in America. But there's plenty of evidence to suggest that right now in Trump's Republican Party, there's not as much of an appetite. There was a report that you actually tried to show up for a meeting of the DOGE committee because, you know, remember, Al Gore reinvented government with Bill Clinton, right?
Absolutely. The only ones who ever did it.
Right. Exactly right.
And balanced the budget and had surpluses.
Yeah. Lest we forget, Cass Sunstein actually cut regulations under the Obama administration. But the report was you showed up and they wouldn't even let you in. Which is sort of a brushback pitch to the idea of bipartisanship. How did you take that? What was the fallout? And how do you keep the faith that there will be common ground given incidents like that?
So what happened was, is I heard Musk and Ramaswamy were coming to Capitol Hill. There's a thing called the DOGE caucus that a Republican is running. His name is Aaron Bean, and he's a good guy. So I called up, I had my staff call up and said, listen, I want to come to the meeting with Ramaswamy and Musk. You know, can I come? And they said, oh, let us check them. They called back and said, nope, this is for Republicans only. I was like, I don't understand. So as Musk was walking into the building, the reporters were all calling out to him. And they said, do you want the Democrats to be part of this? And he said, absolutely. So I saw that like 40 minutes later. And I ran down to the meeting and I went in. It was like 5 minutes left in the meeting. So I missed the meeting. But I went up to Musk and Ramaswamy afterwards. And I said, listen, you got to try and work across party lines. So now I'm talking to the guy, Aaron Bean, and I said, listen, we should try and find some, like the woman we were talking about earlier, the prescription drug case. And Trump was in favor of that when he first ran for office for president. And in 2017, he actually said, when talking about the pharmaceutical drug companies, he said, these guys are getting away with murder. But now he's flipped his position. He's not pushing for negotiation of drug prices like he was before. Same as it was with the TikTok, you know, he used to be all for the TikTok ban. And now he's flip-flopped on that.
Yeah, because of campaign donations, same thing.
Democrats, and certainly I, am not opposed to making government more efficient. I know government is filled with waste, fraud, and abuse. I was a mayor, I was a county executive. That's one of the ways I got so many bond upgrades in my county and my city, was going after waste, fraud, and abuse and using technology and finding efficiencies. But you got to treat people like human beings. You don't want to hurt people in the process. And it's not about this, you know, slash and burn stuff as much as it is being smart and capable.
And every time there's been an effort to do this, I mean, going back to the Hoover commissions that happened during the Eisenhower administration, they were bipartisan. It's got to be bipartisan, or it's never going to get done. It's no way to govern. So you've laid out some areas where Democrats can work with the Trump administration. You obviously are very focused on making sure that working people don't get hurt, the most vulnerable don't get hurt. What are the non-negotiables for you, where you think Democrats got to push back? I mean, whether it's, you know, that you're in the House, so it's not a Senate, but Kash Patel for FBI, or, you know, some of these nominees. What are the things that you think we got to send, Democrats should send a message that we want to work on this, but that's a bridge too far? What's a bridge too far for you?
In the House, we don't do the confirmation. That's in the Senate. But, Affordable Care Act, non-negotiable. That's been a great savior for many people in our country. And we, you know, can we fix things and make it better? You know, yeah, I'll work to mend it but not to end it. You know, the climate change stuff. We made the biggest investment in the history of the world as part of the poorly named Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA. But we made the biggest investment in the history of the world to address climate change. I mean, look at the fires out in California right now. It's just one another. You got the fires, you got the floods, you got the wind, you got the tornadoes, you got the hurricane. I mean, this is real. We got to wake up to this reality. As a matter of fact, they were talking about it at Jimmy Carter's funeral, how he was talking about it in the late 70s. So non-negotiable. We have got to protect the environment. We cannot allow for the weaponization of the DOJ. You know, Trump trying to score points or settle scores, I should say, with people that he perceives as his enemy in the media, in politics. The whole weaponization of the Department of Justice is a very scary, important area that we have to hold fast against. Any of this stuff that, you know, smacks of self-dealing, you know, where the different family members are profiting off of the government relationships. I think we have to be very concerned about that. I'm sure the list is a lot longer.
Yeah, no, but those are good markers. Those are good, big principles. Listen, Tom Suozzi, I want to thank you on coming on How to Fix It. More importantly, I want to thank you for fighting the good fight. I want to thank you for being a real force for rebuilding the middle in our politics and our economy. It's exactly what we need more of here from New York and across the nation. So Tom Suozzi, thanks for joining.
John, thank you so much and for everything you do. You're a great guy. Appreciate you.
Thanks, pal. Be well. Take care. Talk soon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.